Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. I'm reading today from the life and diary of David Brainerd. And though that is the title of the book, you'll notice today very little from David Brainerd and very much from Jonathan Edwards, who put this whole thing together, for reasons that will become very obvious. Mr. Edwards says he was much visited while in Boston by many persons of considerable note and character, and by some of the first rank, who showed him uncommon respect, and appeared highly pleased and entertained with his conversation. And besides his being honored with the company and respect of ministers of the town, he was visited by several ministers from various parts of the country. He took all opportunities to discourse of the peculiar nature and distinguishing characters of true spiritual and vital religion, and to bear his testimony against the various false appearances of it, consisting in or arising from impressions on the imagination, sudden and supposed immediate suggestions of truths not contained in the Scripture, and that faith which consists primarily in a person believing that Christ died for him in particular, and so on. But what he said was, for the most part, heard with uncommon attention and regard, and his discourses and reasonings appeared manifestly to have great weight and influence with many that he conversed with, both ministers and others. Also, the honorable commissioners in Boston of the Incorporated Society in London for propagating the gospel in New England and parts adjacent, having newly had committed to them a legacy of the late Reverend and famous Dr. Daniel Williams of London, for the support of two missionaries to the heathen, they were pleased, while he was in Boston, to consult him about a mission to those Indians called the Six Nations, particularly about the qualifications requisite in a missionary to those Indians, and were so satisfied with his sentiments on this head, and had that confidence in his faithfulness and his judgment and discretion and things of this nature, that they desired him to undertake to find and recommend a couple of persons fit to be employed in this business, and very much left the matter with him. Likewise, certain pious and generously disposed gentlemen in Boston, being moved by the wonderful narrative of his labors and success among the Indians in New Jersey, and more especially by their conversation with him on the same subject, took opportunity to inquire more particularly into the state and necessities of his congregation, and the school among them, with a charitable intention of contributing something to promote the excellent design of advancing the interests of Christianity among the Indians. And understanding that there was a want of Bibles for the school, 36 Bibles were immediately procured, and 141 in bills of the old tenor, given over and above, besides more large benefactions made afterwards, which I shall have occasion to mention in their proper place. Mr. Brainerd's restoration from his extremely low state in Boston, so as to go abroad again and to travel, was very unexpected to him and his friends. My daughter, who was with him, writes thus concerning him in a letter dated June 23. She said, on Thursday he was very ill, with a violent fever, and extreme pain in his head and breast, and it turns delirious. So he remained till Saturday evening, when he seemed to be in the agonies of death. The family was up with him till 1 or 2 o'clock, expecting every hour would be his last. On Sabbath day he was a little revived. His head was better, but very full of pain, and exceeding sore at his breast, much put to it for breath. Yesterday he was better upon all accounts. Last night he slept but little. This morning he was much worse. Dr. Pinchon says he has no hopes of his life, nor does he think it likely he will ever come out of the chamber, though he says he may be able to come to Northampton. In another letter dated June 29, she says as follows, Mr. Brainerd has not so much pain nor fever since I last wrote as before, yet he is extremely weak and low and very faint, expecting every day will be his last. He says it's impossible for him to live, for he has hardly vigor enough to draw his breath. I went this morning into town, and when I came home, Mr. Bromfield said he never expected I should see him alive, for he lay 2 hours, as they thought, dying. One could scarcely tell whether he was alive or not. He was not able to speak for some time, but now he's much as he was before. The doctor thinks he will drop away in such a turn. Mr. Brainerd says he never felt anything so much like dissolution as what he felt today, dissolving, quitting, dying, and says he never had any conception of its being possible for any creature to be alive, and yet so weak as he is from day to day. Dr. Pynchon says he should not be surprised if he should so recover as to live half a year, nor would it surprise him if he should die in half a day. Since I began to write, he is not so well, having had a faint turn again, yet patient and resigned, having no distressing fears, but the contrary. End of quote, end of letter. His physician, the Honorable Joseph Pynchon, Esquire, when he visited him in his extreme illness in Boston, attributed his sinking so suddenly into a state so extremely low and nigh unto death to the breaking of ulcers that had been long gathering in his lungs, as Mr. Brainerd himself intimates in a forementioned passage in his diary, and their discharging and diffusing their purulent matter. This, while nature was laboring and struggling to throw it off, which could be done no otherwise than by a gradual straining of it through the small vessels of those vital parts. It occasioned a high fever and violent coughing, threw the whole frame of nature into the utmost disorder, and brought it near to a dissolution. But it was supposed, if the strength of nature held till the lungs had this way gradually cleared themselves of this putrid matter, he might revive and continue better until new ulcers gathered and broke, but that this would surely sink him again, and there was no hope of his recovery. He expressed himself to one of my neighbors, who at that time saw him in Boston, that he was as certainly a dead man as if he was shot through the heart. But so it was ordered in divine providence that the strength of nature held out through this great conflict, so as just to escape the grave at that turn. And then he revived, to the astonishment of all that knew his case. After he began to revive, he was visited by his youngest brother, Mr. Israel Brainerd, a student at Yale College, who, having heard of his extreme illness, went from thence to Boston in order to see him, if he might find him alive, which he but little expected. This visit was attended with a mixture of joy and sorrow to Mr. Brainerd. He greatly rejoiced to see his brother, especially because he had desired an opportunity of some religious conversation with him before he died. But this meeting was attended with sorrow, as his brother brought to him the sorrowful tidings of his sister Spencer's death at Haddam, a sister between whom and him had long subsisted a peculiarly dear affection and much intimacy in spiritual matters, and whose house he used to make his home when he went to Haddam, his native place. He had heard nothing of her sickness till this report of her death, but he had these comforts together with the tidings, namely a confidence of her being gone to heaven and an expectation of his soon meeting her there. His brother continued with him till he left the town, came with him from thence to Northampton. Concerning the last Sabbath Mr. Brainerd spent in Boston, he writes this in his diary, Lord's Day, July 19. I was just able to attend public worship, being carried to the house of God in a chaise. I heard Dr. Sewell preach in the forenoon, partook of the Lord's Supper at this time. In this sacrament I saw astonishing divine wisdom displayed, such wisdom as I saw required the tongues of angels and glorified saints to celebrate. It seemed to me I never should do anything at adoring the infinite wisdom of God, discovered in the contrivance of man's redemption, until I arrived at a world of perfection. Yet I could not help striving to call upon my soul and all within me to bless the name of God. In the afternoon, I heard Mr. Prince preach. I saw more of God in the wisdom discovered in the plan of man's redemption than I saw of any other of his perfections through the whole day. Well, he left Boston the next day, but before he came away, he had occasion to bear a very full, plain, and open testimony against that opinion that the essence of saving faith lies simply in believing that Christ died for me in particular, and that this is the first act of faith in a true believer's closing with Christ. He did it in a long conference he had with a gentleman who has very publicly and strenuously appeared to defend that tenet. He had this discourse with him in the presence of a number of considerable persons who came to visit Mr. Brainerd before he left the town and to take their leave of him, in which debate he made this plain declaration, at the same time confirming what he said by many arguments, that the essence of saving faith was wholly left out of the definition which that gentleman had published, and that the faith which he had defined had nothing of God in it, nothing above nature, nor indeed above the power of the devils, that all such as had this faith and had no better, though they might have this to never so high a degree, would surely perish. And he declared also that he never had greater assurance of the falseness of the principles of those that maintain such a faith, and of their dangerous and destructive tendency, or a more affecting sense of the great delusion and misery of those that depended on getting to heaven by such a faith, while they had no better, than he lately had when he was supposed to be at the point to die, and expected every minute to pass into eternity. Mr. Brainerd's discourse at this time, and the forcible reasonings by which he confirmed what he asserted, appeared to be greatly to the satisfaction of those present, as several of them took occasion expressly to manifest to him before they took leave of him. When this conversation was ended, having bid an affectionate farewell to his friends, he set out in the cool of the afternoon on his journey to Northampton, attended by his brother and my daughter that went with him to Boston, and would have been accompanied out of the town by a number of gentlemen, besides that honorable person who gave him his company for some miles on that occasion, as a testimony of their esteem and respect, had not his aversion to anything of pomp and show prevented it. Saturday, July 25, I arrived here at Northampton. This is David writing again. Having set out from Boston on Monday, about 4 o'clock p.m., in this journey I rode about 16 miles a day, one day with another. I was sometimes extremely tired and faint on the road, so that it seemed impossible for me to proceed any further. At other times I was considerably better, felt some freedom both of body and mind. Lord's Day, July 26, this day I saw clearly that I should never be happy, yea, that God himself could not make me happy, unless I could be in a capacity to please and glorify him forever. Take away this, and admit me into all the fine heavens that could be conceived of by men or angels, and I should still be miserable forever. Although he had so far revived, as so as to be able to travel thus far, yet he manifested no expectation of recovery. He supposed, as his physician did, that his being brought so near to death at Boston was owing to the breaking of ulcers in his lungs. He told me that he had several such ill turns before, only not to so high a degree, but as he supposed owing to the same cause, namely the breaking of ulcers, and that he was brought lower and lower every time. And it appeared to him that in his last sickness he was brought as low as it was possible and yet live, and that he had not the least expectation of surviving the next return of this breaking of ulcers, but still appeared perfectly calm in the prospect of death. On Wednesday morning, the week after he came to Northampton, he took leave of his brother Israel, never expecting to see him again in this world. he now setting out from hence on his journey to New Haven. When Mr. Brainerd came hither, he had so much strength as to be able, from day to day, to ride out 2 or 3 miles and to return, and sometimes to pray in the family. But from this time he gradually decayed, becoming weaker and weaker. While he was here, his conversation from first to last was much on the same subjects as when in Boston. He spoke much of the nature of true religion in heart and practice, as distinguished from its various counterfeits, expressing his great concern that the latter so much prevailed in many places. He often manifested his great abhorrence of all such doctrines and principles in religion as had any tendency to antinomianism, of all such notions as seemed to diminish the necessity of holiness of life, or to abate men's regard to the commands of God, and a strict, diligent, and universal practice of virtue and piety, under a pretense of depreciating our works and magnifying God's free grace. He spoke often with much detestation of such experiences and pretended discoveries and joys as have nothing of the nature of sanctification in them, as do not tend to strictness, tenderness, and diligence in religion, to meekness and benevolence towards mankind, and a humble behavior. He also declared that he looked on such pretended humility as worthy of no regard, which was not manifested by modesty of conduct and conversation. He spake often with abhorrence of the spirit and practice that appears among the greater parts of separatists at this day in the land, particularly those in the eastern parts of Connecticut, in their condemning and separating from the standing ministry and churches, their crying down learning and a learned ministry, their notion of an immediate call to the work of the ministry, the forwardness of laymen to set up themselves as public teachers. He had been much conversant in the eastern part of Connecticut, it being near his native place. But when the same principles, notion, and spirit began to operate, which have since prevailed to a greater height, and had acquaintance with some of those persons who are become heads and leaders of the separatists, he had also been conversant with persons of the same way elsewhere. And I heard him say, once and again, he knew by his acquaintance with this sort of people that what was chiefly and most generally in repute among them as the power of godliness was an entirely different thing from that true, vital piety recommended in the Scriptures, had nothing in it of that nature. He manifested a great dislike of a disposition in persons to much noise and show in religion, and affecting to be abundant in proclaiming and publishing their own experiences, though at the same time he did not condemn, but approved of, Christians speaking of their own experiences on some occasions, and to some persons, with due modesty and discretion. He himself sometimes, while at my house, spake of his own experiences, but it was always with apparent reserve, and in the exercise of care and judgment with respect to occasions, persons, and circumstances. He mentioned some remarkable things of his own religious experience to 2 young gentlemen, candidates for the ministry, who watched with him, each at a different time, when he was very low and not far from his end. But he desired both of them not to speak of what he had told them until after his death. The subject of that debate I mentioned before, which he had with a certain gentleman the day he left Boston, seemed to lie with much weight on his mind after he came hither. And he began to write a letter to that gentleman, expressing his sentiments concerning the dangerous tendency of some of the tenets he had expressed in conversation and in the writings that he had published, with the considerations by which the exceeding hurtful nature of those notions is evident. But he had not strength to finish his letter. After he came hither, as long as he lived, he spoke much of that future prosperity of Zion, which was so often foretold and promised in the Scripture. It was a theme he delighted to dwell upon, and his mind seemed to be carried forth with earnest concern about it and intense desires, and that religion might speedily and abundantly revive and flourish. Well, we'll continue next time with his journey toward death. There's just no question now that he's on his way down. Be a little more from Brainerd next time, and a little more from Edwards. Then one more session after that should finish this book. Thank you for joining with me. Just where will you be when you're facing death as he was? What will you be talking about? Will you still be as concerned about the things of God as he was, or just self-preservation? Who knows what the future holds for our lives? We're all marching toward death. That's 100% of the human race, as far as I recall. And we're going there. Are we ready for that at any time? Well, thank you again for being here. Come back and check out the website while we're apart from each other. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. And Lord willing, we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.